Welcome to Consciously Speaking, exploring the evolution revolution. On Consciously Speaking, you'll be introduced to guests from all walks of mindful development. Spark up your spirituality, crank up your consciousness, and mend your mind right here on Consciously Speaking with your host, Michael Neely.
Hello and welcome to Consciously Speaking. I'm your host, Michael Neely. And if you haven't had a chance to take our short audience demographics survey, I hope you'll take the time to do so after today's show. You can find the link to this 7-question survey, super short, on the show notes or at www.michaelneely.com. And I really appreciate you doing that. And now, on with the show. Today's guest is Marty Klein. Born in Brooklyn, New York in 1948, Marty grew up with his heart set on being a weatherman. He eventually realized that dream during his time in the U.S. Air Force, but found it shattered when he lost his eyesight in 1974. What started as the biggest challenge of his life turned out to be a blessing in disguise. Marty eventually landed in Woodstock, New York, where he found his identity as a man, a loving partner, a caring stepfather, and a good friend while working for Family of Woodstock, a crisis intervention center. Having come to a place of grounding and clarity about his journey, he wrote his first book, a memoir, Blindsided, One Man's Journey from Sight to Insight. He went on to pen 2 more books, Emotional Cleansing, The Spiritual Journey Toward a Clear Heart, and The Enlightened Gambler, The Heart and Spirit of the Risk Taker in All of Us, published in 2013. Being blind has never slowed him down, as he also co-founded Namaste Yoga Center, realizing that everything happens on a mat, and co-produced a 5-CD instructional set called Beginning Yoga for the Blind and Visually Impaired. Marty participated in a spiritual workshop with Ram Dass, and the sound of the harmonium that Krishna Dass played that night so touched his heart that he has been chanting and leading kirtan with his harmonium ever since. Marty can be found at www.blindyoga.net. Welcome to the show, Marty. It's great to have you here.
Thanks, Michael, for having me. I'm happy to be here.
It's totally my pleasure. You know, I'm curious, you know, we've spoken a few times, but never met in person. And so I'm curious, as our listeners are too, I'm sure, who is Marty Klein the man, and what is he up to on our little blue dot?
There's so many aspects of me and so many directions to go, and right now, I will just tell you that it's the springtime in Woodstock, and I'm alive and vibrant and happy to be in my little community, loving life, loving my friends, and working on the projects that I have in front of me for this year.
And Marty, what lights you up in the mornings right now and makes you want to jump out of bed and seize the day?
Well, first of all, every morning this week, I've been awakened by the geese around Woodstock squawking. The sun in the morning, I have a wonderful deck that faces the south, and I love going out on the deck and feeling the warm morning sun. It's just great. I love doing yoga in the mornings and having breakfast with my partner and then sitting down and getting to some work. And right now I'm working on a trailer for a documentary that I plan to be doing in the next few months, so I'm looking forward to that. And I have a concert planned in the fall. I'm also a musician and I love singing, so I'm planning some of the songs for that at this time.
Wow, sounds like you are super busy. You know, I'm curious, Marty, as I'm sure our listeners are as well, how was it that you actually lost your sight?
I was in the Air Force in 1968 and I got orders for Vietnam. And I did not want to go to Vietnam in any way. I didn't want to help killing people. I didn't want anybody to have a chance of killing me. It was just completely not in my nature to participate in any war effort. Although I did not have the ability, I was not raised to go to Sweden or to go to Canada, although I did have opportunities to do that. It wasn't in my nature. So one thing led to another, and the eye doctor found something wrong with me. And I was very happy about it because it was going to keep me out of going to Vietnam.
And how hard was it then for you to make the shift from a life with sight to a life without sight?
Well, you know, I got 3 more sets of orders for Vietnam. I didn't have to go, but in the process, I was dealing with, you know, eye disease on surgeries and stuff. And within a couple of years, I had lost my sight completely. Mm-hmm. I would think that looking back, it was probably a good 5 to 7 years of dealing with depression and try to figure out who I was now that I was not the person I used to know who had sight, who was an athlete, who would drive his car, who was doing all the things that I did with sight. Now I was a different person, and I had to face that, and it was not easy. But I did get involved in some therapeutic movements that really did help me center myself and know that even though I was now a person without sight, I still was very alive, very vibrant, intelligent, and I could certainly have a wonderful life even without sight.
Mm-hmm. Well, can you pinpoint a specific moment in time or an event or a person even, something that kind of got you started on your spiritual path?
Oh, the spiritual path. Well, I guess when my friend came over one day to teach me some yoga in my house. Yeah, I think I've always had a desire to, I read a lot of books about spirituality, but I didn't feel spiritual at the time. You know, I talk about reading the books. I actually got cassettes because I was that blind at that point. And I had my dog and my cat that I was living with, and I was pretty at peace with my life, but I had no connection to spirituality. But I think when my friend John turned me on to yoga, somehow that yoga and then getting involved with chanting and starting a holistic learning center that I did in 1998 in Tallahassee, Florida, that I founded and led for 7 years, all those things moved me toward my spiritual path.
So, Marty, at what point did yoga become so big in your life that you decided that you wanted to, you know, teach it and create your own training and aspects of it?
In 2001, my partner Gretchen went to yoga teacher training at Kripalu Institute. And when she came back, she was teaching yoga every week. And I got involved at that point with yoga. And I did it on a regular basis. And I really started appreciating its value and integrating its benefits into my life. That was probably a good turning point for me.
Mm-hmm. Nice. You know, I know that you did some work with the family of Woodstock. Could you tell me, is there anything in particular that made you good at the work that you did there?
Well, initially I got involved with family when I was still searching for my identity as a blind person. And when I found out that I could be answering the phones of people who were in distress, I could listen to them and give them some really good guidance on the phone and had nothing to do with whether I could see or not. Mm-hmm. I think that was a big thing for me to realize that I could be useful even though now I was blind. So, you know, I think that was a pretty big thing. And then from there, I started doing more than one shift a week at family. I started doing two or three, and then I became in charge of one day and eventually became part-time program coordinator at family. So my intelligence and my passion for life and just seemed to take over, and I started moving up the scale, so to speak, of, you know, authority there, because I became a pretty regular person there and doing good work. Mm. Felt very good about my life at that point.
Yeah, sounds wonderful. Would you share with our listeners a bit about your three books that you've written?
Okay. Blindsided, One Man's Journey from Sight to Insight was my first book. That's basically a memoir of what I went through in detail about when I had sight, who I was at that time, to what I went through in losing my vision and how I reclaimed the sense of my life. Pretty much what we're just talking about now.
Mm-hmm.
The second book, Emotional Cleansing, The Spiritual Journey Toward a Clear Heart, was a compilation of all my years in the counseling world. And I learned a lot about the human condition, about emotional health and well-being and releasing emotions and learning how to move your life forward and to be an empowered human being. So that book was a very good compilation of all the years I was in the counseling world. The third book, The Enlightened Gambler, The Heart and Spirit of the Risk Taker in All of Us, was just recently came out about a year and a half ago. And that's a combination of my Brooklyn roots with my spiritual path. I combine them both. And a lot of the stories in the book are a lot of fun about gambling, but it's more than gambling, like dollars on a horse. It's about gambling in relationships, the gamble of marriage. It's about gambling in getting a new job or buying a new house or having surgery or realizing that we do dance in the land of uncertainty in this world. And we act often like we're very secure and stable and invulnerable. It's not true. So it's a good book, and it helps people realize that it's okay to know that we're dancing in the land of uncertainty, because there's something about that uncertainty that's magical and mysterious, and that unknown factor makes life very juicy.
Mm. Who would you think that your latest book has most appealed to?
Oh, boy. I would think that there are two groups of people. One, people who like to gamble. Mm-hmm. Because they want to read about how to be the enlightened gambler.
Right.
And I think they get a lot out of it, because in between the lines of the stories about gambling, there's a lot of insight and wisdom. I think there's another group of people that know about risk-taking, and they get to read this book, laugh a lot from some of the stories that I went through, the ups and the downs of the being in the gambling world, but also they understand something about the spirituality of life itself.
Do you know the impact that your books had on readers? I mean, have you gotten feedback from readers about how it's changed their lives in any way?
I have gotten it around my first two books. The last one just came out, so I haven't heard too much. I mean, I hear some people who like the book, but Blindsided is still being read by a lot of people, and I still get comments about how they couldn't put it down, and how it was very important in them learning about their own struggles in life and their own, the parts of their lives that have been inspiring too. You know, one of the things I say in the book, Blindside, is I don't mince my words about how hard it was to have lost my sight. I was pretty honest. And there was one scene that I talk about in the book when I used to bowl on an average of 165. I was a pretty good bowler. And when I was losing my sight, I went to the alleys with a few friends, and I bowled an 82. And it was all because I couldn't see.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know. I was so upset, so depressed. And I came home with my friends and ran into the house, grabbed one of my bowling trophies to smash it on the wall. And I grabbed it so hard that the hand of the trophy went into my hand, and blood was spewing out all over the place. I had to go to the emergency room, get 4 stitches, and I didn't even break the trophy. It was like that was one of the lowest points of my struggle with having lost my sight. It was very painful. And to let people know that anytime you go through a horrible situation in life, a life-changing situation, it's not going to always be easy. It's going to be hard most of the time, but you can get through it. I don't want to say that it wasn't hard to get through. It was hard to get through, but I did get through it.
For more Consciously Speaking, go to michaelneely.com. Sign up for the Art of Forgetting newsletter and keep up to date on the latest blogs, podcasts, and more.
You know, I'm curious about the part that music has played in your spiritual path. I know I mentioned it briefly in the introduction, and as we spoke prior to the show, you mentioned that you just recently did a kirtan event that you led. And so I'm curious about how that factors into your current spiritual lifestyle and areas of consciousness.
Well, I'm doing concerts these days also, where it's just like music. Like I did a concert a while back called Traveling Through the Decades of Music with Marty and Friends. And that was really fun because we went from the 50s to the 60s all the way up to present time, and all the music that touched my life as I was growing up. So that was a lot of fun. But when I chant, it touches a deeper place in my heart. It's a spiritual thing for me. And I just love it. It feeds me in a very special way. And whenever I lead a kirtan, I always tell people it's time to quiet our minds and open our hearts and just allow the voice of your spirit to come out and join us in harmony and melody. And it's just a beautiful thing. I love it. And almost always people come up to me afterwards and they're really touched. Their hearts are open. Some of them are teary and they want to give me a hug and say, thank you so much for leading this kirtan. And that's such a special thing. I love it.
Marty, who were some of the major influences on you and quite honestly, all of the levels of your work, you know, between the yoga, the kirtan, and so forth. Who were the influencers?
Well, you know, as a kid, I was growing up, I had some male heroes of mine. Muhammad Ali was a hero of mine. John F. Kennedy was a hero of mine. And John Lennon was a hero of mine. Those were three men that really touched my heart in a special way. Muhammad Ali, John Lennon, and John Fitzgerald Kennedy. And I still to this day see them as heroes that have been very instrumental in my own growing as a human being. Recently, I was in the counseling world, and Harvey Jackins and Charlie Kreiner, not well-known figures, they were very important to me. Currently, I don't know. I think that Barack Obama was very important to me as the first African-American president for the United States to have. And we'll see what happens if Hillary becomes the first female president. I kind of see myself these days as an inspiration for a lot of people rather than me still looking for inspiration from other people.
Mm, that's wonderful. So how would you define consciousness or conscious living?
It's a great question, Michael. There's so many levels of consciousness. And for me, when I can wake up and feel good about myself and go to sleep and feel good about myself, that's really important. But there's so many levels of consciousness. Like I tell people, we have these bodies. We have the physical body, the emotional body, the mental body, and the spiritual body. And I always tell people that the yoga is the union of mind, body, and spirit. And when we're there, we're not alone. We're not here to fight anybody. We're here to grow as human beings, just like trees are here to grow. And there's so much that is good in all of us. And if we can learn to look at and face the parts of ourselves that are toxic or just take us away from the heart and spirit of what it is to be alive and loving life, learn to drop those. Learn to get out of those toxic patterns of behavior and keep moving forward toward loving life, loving yourself, loving people, loving community, and making a difference on the planet. And you know, it doesn't have to be, you don't have to bring peace to the Middle East. You could be selling ice cream and make a difference. And I think people get confused about that. And another thing about the ego, a lot of people talk about trying to eliminate the ego. I think the most conscious thing we can get to is to know that we have egos. They're wonderful. They help us get to where we are going, and they're very important in our doing what we are here to do on the planet. And occasionally they get in our way. So if we understand that and can embrace the ego and love our egos as well as our bodies and our hearts and our minds, then we have nothing to fight, nothing to hate about ourselves, nothing to feel ashamed about. We are human beings. We are not perfect. We are perfect human beings.
So with that in mind then, Marty, how would you coach someone toward, and let's say it's in a yoga practice that you're leading, how do you coach someone to consciously live in a world that's often, you know, calling for us to go to sleep?
Yeah, yeah, good point. Well, we have choice. We can go to sleep or we can wake up. I used to lead workshops called Awake, Aware, Alert, Alive. You know, go for your life. Breathe deeply. Be open to whatever feelings come up for you. Don't run from them. People tend to subventilate because they don't want to feel deeply, because they don't know what to do with the feelings. Go into a support group. Find places where they can teach you how to understand and work with your emotions, because they will guide you toward wonderful things and away from things that are not good for you. If you're on the yoga mat, there's a phrase called no forcing, no holding back. You don't want to push yourself over the cliff, but you don't want to be so lethargic that you don't challenge yourself. Mm-hmm. Your body knows what it's like to lie around day after day. It starts getting bed sores. You know, you lose your muscle strength. If you get atrophy if you don't work your muscles. Your body wants to be alive and active and move. So give it what it wants, but don't work it so hard that you abuse it. Stay in touch with your heart, your belly, your body, and listen to yourself. you know, like not your mind necessarily, but your body. Your body will talk to you. And it's one of your best friends if you allow it to be a best friend.
Absolutely. So what are you up to right now, Marty, that you'd like to share with our listeners?
I'm in the process of putting this film trailer together to try to raise a bunch of money so I can go along with my filmmaker and put together a 90-minute documentary to help raise the standard of living of people with disabilities in our country, as well as helping wounded soldiers come back and have more of a life than they're offered at this time. Mm. I'm trying to get a conversation going so that we can consider allowing people with disabilities to join the military in non-combat positions and allow wounded soldiers to come back and still work in the military and have careers instead of just being sent home with a wound.
Sounds like a really worthy cause. I appreciate that you're up to that. And I'm curious, you mentioned raising money for that. Are you set up with a Kickstarter or a Indiegogo plan of some sort to raise funds?
I'm going to be working with a company called HatchFund.org. It's a not-for-profit, so all the contributions that come to me are tax-deductible.
Nice.
That's the way I wanted to go about it. There are some hoops to jump through, but I'd rather do it this way. So it should be up, I would say, at the end of May, probably, the whole description, what we're about, with the video trailer. So I'm looking forward to that. It's a big deal for me.
Excellent. Well, I want to let our listeners know that if the link is not currently on the show notes or on my website for this particular podcast episode, as soon as that website is available, we will add that. So please be sure if it's not there now and you want to contribute, come back and find the link at a later date and contribute to this very worthwhile documentary.
Thank you so much for that, Michael. I really appreciate
it. You bet. So, Marty, we've reached the end of our show, and I want to leave our guests with a juicy pearl of wisdom that you can share that they could put to use right now to improve their lives today. What would that be?
We were all born with willpower. We all still have the ability. A lot of us don't know it exists. We think we don't have the willpower to make changes in our lives, but we do. It's just a matter of waking up to that awareness that you, everybody out there listening there, has the willpower to make the changes. It's not, you don't have to go into therapy to recover it. It's there. Just notice it. And when you are in touch with your willpower, it gives you all kinds of abilities to move your life forward in a very powerful, positive way. I'd like to leave everybody with that.
Great words of wisdom, especially coming from a man who has, let me just put it this way, you're more active than people that I know who have no disabilities whatsoever. And so kudos to you.
Thank you, Michael. I appreciate that. I'll just say one more thing. I learned a couple of years ago, I've led workshops on the amazing insight of understanding that our disability is our guru.
Well, Marty, I would love to have you back on the show at some time in the not-too-distant future to lead a guided meditation for us along with some of your kirtan. It would be great to feature that on our show.
That would be a lot of fun. I'd love to do it. We'll work it out.
Excellent. And thanks so much for your time today. I know you're super busy. You got a lot going on, and I appreciate you taking the time out of your day to share some wonderful insights with our listeners here on Consciously Speaking. Thank you, Marty.
You're welcome, Michael. Thank you for having me on.
My pleasure.
You've been listening to Consciously Speaking with me, your host, Michael Neely. Tune in Monday through Friday for conversations with today's premier conscious thought leaders, authors, and coaches. On Saturdays, you can find peace of mind through a guided meditation with a variety of guest leaders. And on Sunday, don't miss our topic of the week, where you can join a deep dive into issues that matter the most. Be sure to subscribe so that you don't miss a single episode. And while you're at it, please leave a rating and a review. I'll even give you a shout out on an upcoming episode as my way of saying thanks. You can learn more about the show, check out the guests' bios, leave comments and feedback at www.michaelneely.com. Until next time, live without limits.